When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Hello, everyone. So we join you here at the deep breath before the storm. Yes, a bit of a nothing week played out in game week 13 as many held back on the premium gambits prior to FPL hitting fast forward and advancing three game weeks in one calendar week from next game week. I'm Tom. Here with a beer. Full disclosure, I've had a couple already as my cousin came over for dinner. Whoops. And as you can see, if you're watching on YouTube, and apologies in advance for poor operation of the slideshow due to technical incompetence, but I'm going to blame the beer. Sam's not here this week. He's off in Spain visiting family, and I frankly ordered him to stay away. He was about to take his laptop out and his camera and his mic and everything. I was like, no, Sam, no. Enjoy your break. And instead, I've got a brilliant guest this week. Unfortunately, they couldn't make it. So I got a fantastic backup guest for this week. Unfortunately, they couldn't make it either. So I got a really good backup guest for this week, but they pulled out at the last minute. So instead, I'm joined by Adam Pritchard at 3-5 Who, Planet FPL's Arsenal correspondent, who, in all seriousness, is one of my best friends in the fantasy football community. And I'm very thankful he's kindly agreed to come on this week. Welcome, Adam. Thanks so much for your time. It's your third pod appearance?
I think it might be my fourth by now, but I won't take offence to the fact that the others were so forgettable that you decided to wipe them from your memory.
I just keep... I know we did one in lockdown, that's for sure. We had you on with Anthony. Maybe did we have you on with Lucy as well at some point?
I think I did a pre-season one last season, then I did a Christmas one. So yeah, I think this is my fourth time. But yeah, I know you were worried about there not being any Manscaped ads this week, so you wanted to have someone on talking bollocks, which is my
Thanks for that. Yeah, very, very smooth of you. So yeah, would you mind introducing yourself quickly to the good people if you haven't met Adam before?
Yeah, so my name's Adam, at 3-5 Who, spelt out on the platform formerly known as Twitter. I am a self-professed pun connoisseur and Arsenal correspondent for Planet FPL.
Perfect. And we are indeed this week, who got the assist? And on today's pod, we'll be assessing what middle management call the paradigm shift as we look over the prospects of a few teams who are going to be who are perpetually very important to us, but especially so over the next sort of little period due to squad personnel changes and how much injuries in particular, and maybe in some extent new personnel and new management have affected them and created new opportunities in fantasy football. A short bowl claims update and a decent number of questions as well. It's the 27th of November today. Wolves versus Fulham is on the background, but it's not particularly FPL relevant. So we thought we'd give it a miss and just kind of get going straight away. Speaking of which, let's go into the scores on the doors for this week. Starting off with yours truly. So I got 48 this week, which is bang on safety for where I am. That's 429k up to 422k. I was looking very good after my man Flash Gordon smashed in a goal and an assist, but the Arsenal game was the one, and we're going to discuss that in a little bit, but the Arsenal game and not having my bases covered unfortunately meant that that green arrow kind of really quickly got eroded. Ben White came on the 92nd minute, which is obviously fantastic. Luckily he was only kind of blocking Tsimikas's two, and Martinelli flattered to deceive yet again, 2 points. That's part of a clean sheet as well. I've got 1 point. So it wasn't amazing. I elected to roll my transfer and didn't take Bowen out for Bumo, a move which has now been done, a spoiler alert. And I don't know, I've kind of ended up this week feeling just a bit frustrated in general, because I think I was looking at, you know, I was speaking to Sam about this as well, doing White to Saliba or White to Gabriel, and at the end of the day I kind of thought, well, you know, he's if he's going to be with the squads and having more information too through transfers. And it's one of those where I'm right on the cusp of having a small green or a small red. But if I'd made that move, then everything would have been slightly better. So a little bit frustrating, but two free transfers to go into the next week is always kind of quite beneficial. So, I mean, I'll take it. We always thought this week would be a bit rubbish, and so it has proved. But I know there's a lot more sort of horror stories out there, especially those who captain Son, which again, we're going to speak about in a little bit. Moving on to you, Adam, and I was just like, oh, Adam's done the same as me. That's good. And I looked at your first bench and I started cursing your name.
Yeah, I guess you could say I've gotten quite fortunate this week.
Quite fortunate, yeah.
Might be a bit of an understatement there. The news about Bowen was relatively, well, firstly, it looked quite bad and it looked like he was definitely going to be out. And then kind of Moyes' press conference and what was coming out after that was indicating that the injury perhaps wasn't quite so bad and that apparently fluid in the knee is perfectly fine. Not in my knee, but yeah, sure. Keep on going, Jared. So yeah, I decided to keep him thinking that there was a better chance than not that he would play. My plan originally when I thought he was going to be out was to sell him for Mohamed Kudus, which he obviously returned, but not quite the return that I will be getting off the bench from Anthony Gordon, which is all turned out quite nicely. I think that's the highlight of my week for sure.
Yeah, it's always lovely to get that the first sub for a huge return, really. And you know, we can call it skill. We can call it skill in this case. I mean, a bit of fluid on the knee. Like, you knew that Moyes was lying. You knew that Moyes' optimism was wrong. But yeah, no, overall, how are you doing this season?
We don't have to talk about that. Let's just focus on this game week. I'm only here for this game week. The listeners don't care about the rest of my my season. The fact that I'm doing pretty averagely, like, this week should salvage somewhat, push me up to about 1 million overall. I've been hovering around the kind of 1 to 1.3 1.4 million mark for the last couple of weeks now, and it's just been a season of not getting the right men at the right time, I think, and I'm sure we'll touch on a couple of them later. But I haven't owned Son at all, haven't owned Trippier at all, and I've sold Watkins for his hauls and bought him back as soon as he starts doing comparatively little again. So yeah, it's my timing this season has been pretty bad, which I think is one of the main reasons why I'm languishing comparatively where I am.
Oh yeah, no, it's always frustrating, isn't it? But one person whose timing has not been bad is Sam. I'm very glad he's not on the pod this week, so I'm not sure I could have taken the wholesome oh no, oh, don't talk about it. Oh yeah, but actually did really well, guys. Sam's had a blinder. He's at 65 this week, taking him beyond me. I think he's about 250k now from 600k he started with. I'm not one for posting midweek, he said on Saturday before posting a massive score. I hope they mention my score, he said, posting earlier on. He's done really, really well. Hit the jackpot in loads of respects. A goal for the Cells, owns Gordon and Saka and Saliba in the Arsenal game. Basically, all of the key men he's hit this week. And 65 is a really good week, in a week where the average is, for the engaged core, I'd say, is around sort of 45-ish. So a really big jump for Sam. So yeah, really well done, begrudgingly. Right, so let's move on to contemplate this week, or the main sort of theme this week, and it is about injuries creating opportunities. So I think that, you know, key injuries have shifted the game, especially as we head into this sort of busy period in FPL, and this is born out of the idea that contemplate this week seems to be kind of sales of Bowen, who's still flagged, and kind of there's a few questions about it. I think a lot of people were looking, if you did hold on to Bowen last week, to move on to Bumo this week. It seems kind of fairly academic, so I can see why he's kind of top for sales out. But increasingly, there's a creep towards dispensing with Son services as well. Nearly 100,000 managers have sold him at the time of recording. So we thought we'd try to assess what's going on with a few football clubs where, for whatever reason, things haven't gone as well as we'd liked. And there's a consciousness that either this is FPL or in a kind of real-life ball. Adam here, a proper football man, able to give us some Grass FC insight as well, as we head into the busy period to come. So we're not going to cover every team. I know there's teams like United that that fans would claim there's loads of injuries that have meant they're doing particularly well. But there are a few sort of teams who I suppose are more sort of FPL relevant, and we'll come round to, I guess, that sort of contemplate thought of, you know, should you be selling a few of these players, or should you be buying a few of these players as well? How does it all look, especially with the injuries which have affected each team? Let's start with Spurs, and I think kind of pivoting off that kind of Son comment, there's been a lot of injuries there, Adam, haven't there, which have definitely shaken the confidence in Spurs for a lot of managers.
Yeah, and obviously as an Arsenal fan, it's been truly devastating, heartbreaking. It's it's really hit me emotionally in my core to see how they've fallen off a cliff. I think it's comparatively fair to say. Obviously, they're still doing well in the season overall, and probably better than they or their fans would have expected pre-season. But yeah, since the most bizarre game in that Chelsea match, they've lost both of their subsequent two games 2-1. They did. I think they did perform better than Aston Villa on the XG.
They did, yeah.
But Son was offside 87 times. And no matter how many goals he scores that are ruled offside, they don't actually count for FPL, unfortunately. But yeah, I think the key injuries there would be obviously James Maddison and then Mickey van der Ven, impacting them both going forwards, certainly from a creative point of view. I think you can see that in the fact that Son has registered his two lowest XG totals in a match in the previous two outings. And then defensively, I just think it's, you don't really have to be too much of a football genius to know that substituting in the likes of Eric Dier, Ben Davies for a £40 million centre-back isn't exactly going to transition seamlessly. And so, yeah, I think it's been evident to see anytime you watch them, they don't look nearly as fluid in the press. I don't think their defensive recoveries, obviously lacking the pace of Van der Ven, are much weaker as well. And it's just had such a significant impact on the way they've been playing, and I think subsequently the attractiveness of their FPL assets.
Yeah, I think certainly we've seen a drop off of kind of net ownership or EO of the defence. I think there was definitely kind of an Udogie supremacy with some Pedro Porreiras around, like me, sold him so quite timing earlier on, just before he's then gone on and returned, attacking returns. I don't really think, to your point there, Adam, we're seeing any sort of clean sheets really on the horizon. Like Vicario has performed very, very well. But this week, fielding kind of, it's like football manager style injury crisis when you're fielding two fullbacks as your centre backs, sort of thing. They're both kind of a light green in the position, you're kind of just doing that, you know. But yeah, Madders and VDV, the big ones out, plus Sar is now out, and Betancourt, because he was, a friend of ours, James Carroll, was saying in our Slack that he was assaulted by Matt Cash, which was a sentiment which was echoed across FPLX, as long as you're Spurs fans, post game, and said they've got 8 first teamers out, which is probably, you know, quite, it's having the impacts that you mentioned. Now, over small sample size indeed, but over the last 3 games, their kind of XG created per 90 is down, and their kind of the time in which they're creating it is down as well. It used to become 50, they created one every 56 minutes, and now it's kind of in the 70s, and I think that that's definitely culminating in people looking at Son, because he's probably the one that most people are owning at the moment. He's a big sort of expensive asset in those people's teams. And there's a Man City game up next, and there's a Newcastle game in two weeks' time, I think, as well, at the end of the 3 week sort of move. And people might be thinking, well, you know what, this could be a good opportunity for me to free up some cash, move away from this guy. I think the ownership is still probably high enough to worry people, but overall the underlying data is good. SIF overall for non-pen SGI this season, Son. But as you said, Adam, it's definitely one that I suppose is giving some people kind of pause for thought. I mean, you don't own Son, I suppose this is kind of almost a bit of a respite for you.
Yeah, definitely. And I think he has been, prior to the injuries, he was one where, just the way my team was set up after I wildcarded, I brought in Salah. So I had Salah and Haaland. So Son was just a player that I could never realistically get to without potentially selling one of the big hitters that I was never really going to consider getting rid of. So it was that kind of thing where every week a Spurs game would come up and I'd be like, God, I hope Maddison matches Son. And he did sometimes, but then occasionally he didn't. And that will result in me getting a red arrow more often than not. So yeah, I think now it's much more easier for me to watch Spurs games. I certainly don't fear them as much. I think the drop-off from the Tottenham starting 11, especially where they've lost those players to their reserves. Mm. I mean, Lo Celso, I thought he was okay, and I think he's a decent player overall, but then you're relying on the likes of Brian Hill or Howard from Big Bang Theory, as we like to call him. You've got Oliver Skip coming in there as well, and we've already talked about the defensive replacements. It's just not conducive to a player who I think starts at sort of 9 million. What is he now? Is he 9.2, 9.3?
No, he's a lot more than that. He's 9.6.
Oh, okay. Well, even more than that.
Really,
I think
really expanded, yeah.
And I think a lot of people will be sort of in a similar position to myself where they don't have Salah, but they do have Son and Haaland, and they probably can't afford to have all three. So I think it's probably the right time now to look at him and think, especially if you don't have Salah, he's the one who has to go, really.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the effective ownership this week was around kind of 66%, but I think there's in top 100k at least. But I think a lot of that was to do with poor souls who sort of captained him, who I think it's fair to say did get unlucky to some extent. I mean, he still statted very well in the game, and there's kind of even outside of the offside goals, I take your point that obviously they don't count in terms of the data. There's a few things that if you're watching the game, you know, but I think there's a cross from Porro where he kind of just couldn't quite connect with the header, you know, all of those sorts of things that, like, he still looks so dangerous in those in any game, really. And but if you're factoring in the defensive problems, and if you're factoring in the fact that Man City are next, I can see that there's going to be a bit of an exodus if our people are sort of considering a slight recalibration of their squads. In some ways, you know, the likes of might come on to them very briefly later on, but it's kind of a bit fortuitous that players like, you know, Darwin Nunez, for example, haven't become more in the picture, just because if they were, I think there'd be a bigger movement of taking a player out of the midfield, because I think most people are sat in a 3-5-2 to move to a 3-4-3, because I think that, you know, for most people, kind of Watkins ticks along, or if you're in Alvarez, he ticks along, and then Haaland is there for a lot of people. Again, we've got no Haaland question later on as well, but Alvarez, but Nunez could be one of those players that if you Son hasn't been performing, but if Nunez was performing, then there'd be more temptation, I think, for people to make that sort of move across. But yeah. I don't know, I kind of felt that watching the game, it kind of felt to me that if you weren't watching it, it'd be easier to remove Son. And if you were watching it, it became a lot harder to remove Son, despite what the data says overall with over the last kind of 3 weeks. I mean, do you think there's any sort of truth in the idea that kind of, even though, yes, they're missing key men, the Spurs system, the Spurs press is still going to create chances? Because it still felt that way to me, even though it was all kind of B-grade individuals who were kind of supplying.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. There definitely is a case to be made there. Like, Postecoglou has been at pains to point out every possible opportunity that he will always try and play the same brand of football that he wants to play with his first choice, and he'll do the same with his sixth, seventh, eighth choice players. He is very, very determined to instill this style in the club, and I think it's clear that they're going to continue to play this kind of high energy football, this front-footed football. So I think, yes, they still will be the type of side that will create chances, but it was talked about so much during the week in FPL circles how the famed Villa high line will play massively into Son's hands. And even then, yes, you have the nearly chances and the ruled out goals, but the XG is very, very low from him. So I don't know if you're going to get many more opponents that are conducive to exactly how Son likes to get opportunities and how he likes to create chances. Certainly, even if you just look at the next three, you've got, I think it's City, West Ham and Newcastle. I don't think any of those teams are going to be as potentially exposed at the back as Villa, or as people perceive Villa to be.
I know that Sam is thinking, well, said last week that he was thinking of removing Son to kind of just do other things this week. And we spoke about this during the international break, that Spurs are kind of ninth for XG, team XG overall. And I think that kind of feeds into what you were saying a little bit, that there's kind of the problem with the missing personnel, and also just in general, them overshooting their XG. A lot of that due to presumably Son being a bit of an XG evader in general. But yeah, it does sound like there is. I was speaking to people on X about this as well after the game. It did really feel like there was kind of two sides to the argument. If you watch the game, yes, Son is kind of a player that is always going to be dangerous. You're always going to feel a little bit worried about it. Maybe less worried about it than when all the key guys were fit in terms of kind of not owning him. But now you can also feasibly build a case to kind of say, yeah, okay, the next three fixtures aren't quite Son games, as you said. Man City play a high line, don't they? Therefore, Son's going to get opportunities. That's how it works, isn't it? I think there's definitely kind of scope for removal now. I think there's definitely, as I mentioned, a tangible argument to keep him. And there's also the fact that the ownership is still kind of fairly high, and after the Newcastle game, they then kind of come into a decent kind of run of four: Forest, Everton, Brighton, and Bournemouth. And the Everton game comes in the week where Man City blank, and that's a home game. So it could be one where you might be thinking, "Oh, actually, it's no probably." I don't know. Would you deem it a don't buy, don't sell at this moment, or would you kind of be thinking, yeah, okay, if you do want to sell, it's probably okay, and now is maybe the time given the next three fixtures.
Yeah, I think it's definitely in a don't buy kind of scenario. But yeah, I think there is a bit of a choose your own adventure that you could do with this. You can, like you say, put the narrative forward that Spurs are always going to be the front-footed, intense attacking side, so Son is fine to keep and they don't blank when City do. So there's that angle. Or where I would be slightly leaning is, I think, especially if you don't have Salah, that feels like a problem, in air quotes, that you need to fix, and Son is a handy escape route, really.
Yeah, and Haaland, and that's your way back to Haaland. Yeah. I mean, that could be the way you do it. Yeah, there's definitely an excuse, a fig leaf, a pretense around selling Son at the moment, which you can get behind. You can build that kind of artifice for yourself, the facade of an argument for yourself to make it sort of work. And it's very, very much around the situation you find yourself in. I mean, for me, I've got Haaland, I've got Salah, I've got Son. I've got a few other issues around my team, as we'll discuss in just a second. But I do think I'll be kind of keeping Son for this period, because I still trust the fact that over time, given what I've seen with my own eyes, which is a very Grass FC argument, that I think he will return over the next little period. I think, given the lack of personnel at Spurs and given his sort of innate ability, I think it'll probably be all right. But yeah, it's one that he's now under supervision. Sounds wrong. He's being monitored by me, yeah, a little bit. But I can see why Sam, for example, was advancing the case to sell, and I'd only expect that number of intended sales or actual sales to go up over the course of next week. So Mark Dorney called this an Arsenal loving. And I suppose we probably better move on to Arsenal just because, yeah. And I think Odegaard's absence in particular has led to a bit of a strange sort of situation. I spoke about this a few times on the pod, whether it's kind of Arteta intentionalism, trying to make it kind of that we've put our foot on the gas for a bit, only living in second gear up until kind of next year, after next calendar year, that is, after basically being out of gas when it came to April last year. Definitely in terms of Saka and Martinelli, we'll get on the fence in a bit, but in terms of Saka and Martinelli, that it's been particularly noticeable for people who watch Arsenal closely or people who own them in FPL, there's been pretty sort of meh output in terms of the underlying data. XGI per 90 over the last six is both kind of around sort of 0.33, which is not what we saw last year. Saka has indeed kept ticking over. Last gasp assist got open 8 points last year, whereas Martinelli has kind of continuously blanks that I brought him in 4 weeks ago, which is incredibly annoying. And a lot of people have been kind of attributing that to a lack of Odegaard, potentially. no, on FPL Twitter, or FPL X. What's the skinny there, Adam? How much has Odegaard's absence, do you think, impacted those Saka Martinelli numbers? And do you think things are going to change for both or either of them going forward?
To answer your last question first, I don't know how significantly things will change, even with Odegaard returning, because I think this is more fundamental than just player absences, which I think both Odegaard and Jesus being out, I think we've only played our first choice, if you can count that as a front four.
Is it twice?
Twice, yeah, I think, yeah. In the Chelsea game and then against Brentford. So I think their absences certainly impact the team overall in terms of the fluidity and the ability to certainly keep the ball moving quickly in the final third. But I just think overall there is a more reserved and a more controlled nature to Arsenal's game plan, which is sort of like you were hinting at. I think it's definitely a reaction to the way that the season tailed off last season, and the way in which Arsenal were in the position where they threw away leads or drew games that they really shouldn't. I think the three ones that I've always picked out were the West Ham game, the Liverpool game, and the Southampton game. I know it's painful to bring up, but we have to face these like men. I think those three games were symptomatic of a wider problem in Arsenal season, where despite showing the attacking quality that in theory would make you think they should win a game quite handily, 3 or 4-0, the midfield structure and the defensive structure was too disjointed, even though it kind of allowed for the attacking fluidity. And I think Arteta has realised that and thought that it's more sustainable for the team long term to play this more kind of compact, if you want to call it conservative, I can understand why you want to call it that.
Cautious, maybe?
Yeah, I think reserved is the way I would put it.
Right.
So, onto the point of how much the injuries have impacted it. The XG is very similar per game. Obviously, the sample size isn't massive, but without Odegaard this season, it's been an average of 1.76 XG per 90, and with him, it's been 1.74. So really, it is very, very similar in terms of the team overall. But I think the interesting thing that I've noticed is, but I think you can see it both in the game and then if you look at the stats, both Saka and Martinelli have had more touches per game this season, but Saka in particular has had less touches in the box and fewer shots per 90. So I think that's kind of indicative of this overall shift in the team towards one of control, not wanting to press things too much if it's not needed, and trusting the overall quality of the individuals in the attack to, like we saw against Brentford, pull out an amazing cross, cross/chip-through ball, however you want to term it, from Saka to Havertz at the back post. And yeah, I think that's just the trend this season. I think we'll continue to see it is Arsenal putting up fewer of those kind of 4-5-0 type of games, and the likes of Saka and Martinelli are probably going to see their FPL output diminished comparatively, I would guess.
Okay. Interesting. There's definitely kind of a more kind of structuralist question which is going around, which is, are we missing Xhaka? I remember you on Planet FPL saying that it was more that Xhaka was kind of babysitting a role which wasn't really suited for him. But it's almost kind of like we've gotten rid of a deputy and then realised the deputy is maybe better than the new guy that we've actually appointed to the role in some ways in Kai Havertz. I mean, how much do you think that is that kind of intentionless thing from Arteta versus kind of the personnel shift? Because Xhaka was doing a lot of things which are very different, like ball progression, appearing in the box. Havertz has been okay at doing those things, but it hasn't kind of quite seen the same in terms of the dynamism. Am I right?
Yeah, I think certainly you are right in that Xhaka is a very proactive and visual player, in that you never don't see him on the pitch, if that makes sense. Like, he's always doing something. He's very energetic in the way he moves. He's very vocal. He does everything at 100 miles an hour, whereas Havertz, I think, is much more I don't want to say passive because that makes it sound like he's not doing anything. He's much more subdued just by the very nature of the way that he moves around. And also the fact that I think a lot of the work he does is off the ball and it's more positional than Xhaka, who did a lot of his work on the ball. So I think there's a bit of a difference there where Havertz is used for movement off the ball to kind of reposition the opposition midfield and defence, whereas Xhaka was much more of a either foot on the ball, let's get things going, let's bring the whole tempo of this game up, or let me make a lung-busting run back into my own box and do a questionable slide tackle that at last season more often than not worked out.
Yeah, so before that was a walking red card. So it's definitely true. I think the Havertz, in some ways, in terms of the off the ball thing, I think loads of people didn't really realise that how big he was. So it's definitely a bit of a unit in a lot of ways, which lends itself to that. I'm not saying Xhaka isn't absolutely stacked, which he is, but Havertz sort of size and general sort of, I suppose, profile as a player is slightly different, which is maybe impacting things as well to some extent. Like, the alternatives are kind of all over the place. Like Fabio Vieira, I think hasn't quite got the profile it seems for the Premier League in some ways. Obviously, hope he kind of does flower, but it does sound like there's been a few kind of links with him out to leave the football club and go elsewhere. And you've got Trossard, who did play in that role this week, who's another one who I suppose it's completely fine to keep an eye on, but I think he'll be a bit of a kind of a Swiss Army knife sort of character who will be kind of showing up or in and around the front line. And I suppose FPL wise, then that leads us to the defence. Nick from WGTA, former co-host from this parish, asked, is double Arsenal defence an option? What are your thoughts on Zinchenko? I mean, his defence all the way, surely, then, Adam. Last week, we said that the XGC was great. Some idiot bought Ben White. I can't go over how annoying that is. That's just nothing in the press conferences and something. Oh, he's gone, he's injured. And here we are. The defence seems to, in contrast, if we're playing in that sort of cautious style, have become much more kind of, I suppose, attractive to FPL managers. And we're almost kind of looking at a Man City sort of style defence from years gone by, aren't we? Just now over the 10 XG conceded mark. But, I mean, it's taken an awfully long time to get there. And I don't know, is double Arsenal defence suddenly quite a viable thing, especially with our fixtures looking pretty decent?
It's funny because when you said the Man City comparison, that was exactly what I thought of as well, when it did feel viable to go for either a Walker or a Diaz or maybe John Stones when he was fit back in the day. So yeah, I think certainly if you were to put it to me that I had to double up in one area, it would definitely be in the defence over the attack. I think most people now seem to have calm down about Gabriel and realize that it's not like he's going to be rotated every week. It will just be, I think, in the easier, in air quotes, home fixtures in a compact schedule, which unfortunately we are heading into. But then, like you say, you've experienced it with White, where there can just be these occasional random absences. And Nick asked about Zinchenko, but I know you and I, Tom, were talking prior to the Ben White absence that Zinchenko didn't even look certain of his place. I think he had put in a couple of iffy performances, and Tomiyasu won October Player of the Month. Such had been his impact coming in for Zinchenko. So yeah, I definitely think defence is the way to go. As a Gabriel owner, am I looking to add to it? Probably not at the moment, but if I was going to, I think Saliba would be the simplest place for me to go.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a couple of options this week, be it selling White. I think I'll wait until the Champions League and wait until kind of Friday to make that decision. Or I could double up on defence and sell cash. We've got a question about this later on, so I won't go into it now, but sell cash for Saliba. I could get Gabriel as well. But you were saying that maybe Luton may qualify as one of those games where we may see Gabriel potentially kind of be a rotation risk. Old Kiwi or coming in for that one, perhaps. So it's one that I'll keep under advisement. But yeah, Saliba certainly has become that sort of Ruben Diaz, John Stones from the old, and I guess Laporte as well, coming to this sort of equation kind of character, who's just going to be a constant in that defence. So every week, you've got no worries about that individual playing. And in a team where the kind of team XG is just over 10 after 13 game weeks, that's surely got to be one that you just kind of buy and forget about if you don't own already.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there's probably even a case, especially after Ramsdale's performance against Brentford, that David Raya isn't going to lose his place anytime soon. And if people are fed up of Areola never getting any points and Matt Turner seemingly never going to play again, maybe there's an option there for people to consider if the goalkeeper spot is one they've got a particular problem with.
No, makes sense. And for those who own Saka and to some extent Martinelli, but no one's stupid enough to Martinelli.
Who would do that?
are there any words of encouragement you could proffer from a proper football man's point of view?
I think even in this time where it has been seen that, or it is perceived that he's not playing particularly well, which I don't necessarily agree with, he's still able to return. Like, he's still very consistently ticking along.
Saka, right?
Yeah. Saka definitely is.
I know it is, but it's just to clarify.
just to clarify, it's Saka. It's not Martinelli, the one that you own, Tom, the one that is a terrible pick. It's Saka, the one you decided against. But yeah, no, Saka is very consistent. He is still ticking along, even in this comparatively quiet spell to the explosive periods we saw from him last season. And he is capable of pulling out like something from nothing. We saw it against Nottingham Forest on the opening day. And even the ball against Brentford, I thought, was quite spectacular to be able to pick out that run in a crowded box. No, so yeah, I think Saka is a definite keep, and if you're in the position where you own Martinelli and you don't own him, I would be very, very tempted to move across. I really, really would.
Yeah, I think that's definitely on the agenda potentially for me to crab across. So it's interesting, isn't it? So Spurs is more of a kind of, yeah, you're okay to kind of jump off, and then for Arsenal it's more of a, all right, defensively almost definitely sure. If you haven't gone there yet, go there. Maybe don't go there with Ben White, but go. Why would you? But go there with a Gabriel, although with caveats, or definitely Saliba if you can. And then with Saka, it feels like kind of just one to just kind of get in, nail in, and hope for the best. And Zinchenko, it kind of feels like a bit of an iffy one where you kind of know what you're getting into, similar to a Ben White and similar to a Gabriel potentially. A couple of other teams then. West Ham, selling Bowen, I think, in terms of contemplate, is going to be one which is going to obviously gather speed, even though he may be fit for Crystal Palace. I feel like Bumo in is going to be, well, and it's already kind of shown the market forces the way to go. Like, and without Antonio, without Bowen, or West Ham, a very workmanlike performance against Burnley, to much the chagrin of Charlie Taylor starters like myself, went from 8 points to 1 point within about, took my daughter up to up for her nap, came back downstairs, and he went from 8 points to 1 point, which is just the way FPL goes, isn't it? And it is obvious, Ben Adam, just to sell Bowen. I know that Sam and I have been salivating over Bumo for a little while now, and I'm very happy to now have got him in. Filthy casual I am, I bought him in last night to catch the rise. Is he the obvious move, Adam? And is it one that you'll be looking at yourself?
It's probably quite boring if I just say yes, but yes.
Thanks, mate. Moving on.
Anyway, I've been Adam. Good night. I think it's the clear replacement. If you look at his XGI per 90, I think is 0.85, so he's statting very, very well, and he's got very attractive looking fixtures. It, like the next three, it's Luton, Brighton, and Sheffield United, and then the famed high line of Villa. What could he do against such a defence there? So he does have the blank game week, which I guess is a potential option. But I think given his price, most people should have a squad where they can probably afford to bench him. I think his ownership is only going to go up from now. And even in the Arsenal game against a very good defence, he had the potential. He had a couple of potential chances, I thought. And he's the clear standout option if people don't own him already. I suspect many will be bringing him in this week.
Yeah, both the shots off the line. One was his shot. The other one he assisted. Mope. And I'm not sure that was a surprise. It didn't go in for Mope. But yeah, still, that could have, again, been a potential haul. And then last week as well, another potential haul that he could have got. And there's a semblance of a feeling that it could be coming, even though Luton are no pushovers, potentially. But I think the same could be applied to West Ham. And many of us are sat with Areola, old Tits McGee in goal. Fourth from bottom for XG against worse XG against than Burnley. Not great, is it? And we've been talking about maybe moving on to Sanchez sooner rather than later. Like, it's definitely, I don't know, it feels like Moyes has traded in defensive solidity for some sort of sense of attacking verve, which is very anti-Moyes. But it feels like kind of that's the way it's gone this season. You can see it in the data as well. It's not just me stipulating that out of nowhere. I'm okay. Right. Their attacking verve isn't amazing. They're kind of 12th for XG overall as a team. But you'd be expecting a Moyes team to be doing better than this. And it makes you kind of think that, we're going to be leaving our goalkeeper in. It's fine. It doesn't matter too much is the classic sort of way of thinking. But after one clean sheet this whole season with your goalkeeper and the good run of fixtures now dissipating, you've got to be thinking it's time for a Tom special or a goalkeeper transfer, as otherwise known, because it has reached that point for a lot of people where we're all casting covetous glances over to probably Sanchez at Chelsea. It's not great, is it, to be a sat of a goalkeeper nobody wants, but you're kind of just starting them for just because there's no other option.
Yeah, I do get that. But at the same time, you think effectively starting price, you've basically got him for free. Like, you're not going to get a cheaper start, consistent starting player than Areola, especially if you bought him before his price rises. So the way I kind of look at it, and it's definitely a stupid way to look at it, but like, I'm just getting his points for free, and I've got so many other issues in my side. Like, we talked about whether or not I want Bowen. I'm kind of considering whether I want Alvarez for much longer. Like I talked about, I haven't had Trippier all season, so there's the potential of whether I want to get him in or do I stick it out. I don't know if I want to worry too much about a player who, yes, isn't performing great, but I've got like no investment in him. Like, he's the cheapest starting player I could possibly want to have. So yeah, I just look at anything I get from him as a bonus, and I'm choosing to focus my kind of transfers of my mental FPL energy elsewhere.
Son upsiding, and I think, but the fact it's a goalkeeper as well kind of aids that and abets that for to a massive degree, because it's the least sexy position. Your only sort of bang is going to be a pen save or something like that. Areola has been consistently getting saves, to be fair. He's been getting free points more often than not. So yeah, I mean, there's definitely a scope to kind of just be like, well, you know what, I'm just going to leave that and focus my attention elsewhere, as Adam said. And I probably would as well, to be honest. If I didn't have anything else to do, I'd be getting rid of Areola in a heartbeat. But I've got some vague plans to remove Areola for Sanchez when I can, but it's one I'm not going to force. I won't be taking a hit to do that, I don't think. But Chelsea's run's very alluringly good. We'll see. penultimate team. There's one emerging team we'll kind of briefly touch on as well, depending on that very much depends on the news over the next kind of couple of days. But Newcastle, ravaged by injuries, no Wilson, which means that Isak is one which is kind of rising in interest. We're both very happy Gordon owners, and so is Sam, albeit you benched him this week, you bastard. Still got the points. So Isak is one that a lot of people are kind of looking at, interested in. You're someone with a 3-4-3, and for me, again, that would be one that I'd be really interested in buying in. But I think the defense is probably one where there are quite a few questions. If you don't own Lascelles, is obviously, again, one of those players you kind of played nothing for, as you've said. But Trippier, do you think he's expendable for people if you want to either move to an Arsenal asset and or reallocate funds? Or is he a player that you still keep the faith with? I sold him a little while ago, one that I probably won't be going back to just because the price is fairly prohibitive now. I've got him at 6.5, sold him at 6.9, I think it was, with the added sort of cash in. But after the United game, you know, they've got Everton, Spurs, and then they've got a really nice kind of run over the Christmas period, in particular, Fulham, Luton, and Nottingham Forest. Even if you did Trippier to Lascelles, and then depending on Botman news, and then kind of reallocated that money, I mean, is there much sort of interest in keeping Trippier if you owned him?
It's a tricky situation because it is now at a point where I think in terms of expected goals conceded, Trippier is on like roughly one a game this season, which is probably much worse than I think a lot of people would expect. But he does just seem to constantly return points, and he is, I think everyone who doesn't own him always has the spectre of Kieran Trippier looming over their game week, just waiting for him to randomly pull a 9-pointer out of his behind and get top bonus for no apparent reason. He seems to be very, very capable of that. I think the situations where I'd be looking to move him on were if I needed to free up funds to potentially get in someone like Salah. In that case, I would look at probably going down to Lascelles, given the increasingly cryptic nature with which Howe responds to all questions about Botman's injury. I think he was talking in his previous press conference about saying, oh yeah, we know what the injury is. We're unsure how long he's going to be out. We're hoping it's not too long. We're hoping he can rejoin the group pretty quickly, but there is a chance that may not happen. And then a journalist asked what the injury was, or if they could know what the injury was, and he just said no. So he's not really giving us much information there, but were I to sell Trippier, I think the two main things in my mind would be just downgrade to Lascelles, treat it as a free spot, still getting that investment in Newcastle defence. And then when Botman's comes back, I either consign Lascelles to the back of the bench or I look for another kind of 4.0, 4.1 player like Branthwaite or someone like that.
There's always Branthwaite in the banana stand, isn't there?
We've always got Branthwaite.
We will always have Branthwaite.
Yeah. Or if I'm not going that way, I would look at either doubling up on an Arsenal defence or going to Saliba. I think those are the two options that would be the ones I would go to were selling Trippier on my mind.
Makes a lot of sense. I mean, it kind of feels like it always kind of comes back to Saliba and just getting him in and forgetting about it, honestly. Mm. I mean, it feels almost to me that I'm interested in doing that over buying Saka, which is it's kind of one of the kind of options for me this week, which we'll talk about later on. And final question on Newcastle, for you in a 3-4-3, Alvarez still stinking up the room. Is Isak a player who is on your mind as an avid watcher of Spanish football? You knew as of kind of an hour ago that Rafa Benitez was the Celta manager, wearing a Real Betis a kit tonight for people on YouTube. I mean, is he a player that is of interest to you to move in for Alvarez? Because surely there's a lot of people who are kind of looking at him thinking your time is nigh now.
Yeah, no, definitely. My potential move, which is a bit of a spoiler for later on, is selling Bowen to Mbeumo and Alvarez to Isak, and I've got 1.1 in the bank, so I've got plenty of money to do that move. And when I say it like that, it does seem like that is an increasingly attractive option for me. And yeah, with Wilson again, who knows what Howe is going to come out and say with regards to his injury. It's obviously they've got the massive game in the Champions League this week. They're playing PSG, I believe. And they're in a situation in that group where they can't really afford to do anything but win. So I think obviously we've got to wait to see what happens after that. But yeah, Isak would be top of my watch list for Alvarez replacements, especially for people like me who are thinking that they want to stick with that 3-4-3 formation.
Yeah, no, it definitely seems like one that I'm going to be thinking, I really like him, but I've been burnt from selling Watkins too many times this year.
Yeah.
Even though there's tough fixtures coming up for Villa, that kind of perpetual starter thing is going to be difficult to shift. The Talisman theory is going to loom large there, but it certainly makes a lot of sense. The final one is the emerging one, which is Liverpool. So we can talk about Tsimikas in a second, but of Alisson, we don't really know. There's a lot of kind of Twitter guff going on, and they might be out for a little while, which is Koivin Kelleher. Yes, Anthony, I pronounced that correctly. is the backup there for 3.9, a good fixture to Liverpool, but again, one that we kind of question. Jota, if he is injured, then again, you've got kind of Luis Diaz and Darwin Nunez's minutes becoming even more sort of nailed on. I'm not going to talk about that because we don't know what the situation is with that. But Tsimikas, both, you own Tsimikas, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, so both owners. How are you looking to deal with that over the next sort of few weeks? I mean, I think I'll be obviously keeping an eye on what happens in the Europa League. But the next few fixtures are very kind of enticing. I really like the look of them. Is Tsimikas going to play all three of those? Who the hell knows? And for me, I'm kind of backed up because I've got, if he doesn't play kind of the midweek game, think from memory he's against Sheffield United, and then I've got Taylor coming off the bench against Wolves again. Bloody Taylor. Issa Kabore, who's playing Arsenal. Oh, that's great. But yeah, it's one where he's definitely a questionable one, but almost kind of a questionable hold due to the fact the fixtures are good and we've got more pressing issues to deal with potentially, right?
Yeah, the way I'm looking at it is basically until he becomes a problem for me, I'm not going to like worry about it too much. Like until it's Robertson is back fit and he's ready to play 90 minutes again, I think that's the point where he clearly evidently becomes a sell. I guess a lot of people will be in the position where there might be some absolute morons out there who bought Ben White for some reason and don't have another Arsenal defender. So there could be people out there Tom, would you believe it, with Ben White and Tsimikas, who might be a little bit concerned about having to go right to the depths of their bench on a consistent basis as we get to this kind of more condensed period of the fixture schedule. So I can understand why people are a little bit nervous over his minutes there. But yeah, my advice would be just hold on to him until it becomes evident that Robertson is fit and is ready to start consistently.
Yeah, maybe this is what he's there for, as the specialist left back. Cool. All right, let's move on to the bold claims this week. That was a good discussion, actually. Quite a lot of different sort of elements of everything. Spurs, remove, is probably okay. Arsenal, move your kind of assets around a little bit. Don't worry about the attack as much. Get him on the defence. West Ham, probably okay to remove for Bumo. And Newcastle, again, a bit of a kind of a rejig, I guess. And we'll see what happens with Liverpool. But on to the bold claims. And this week, Sam has gone for a Watkins 10-pointer versus Bournemouth. And I have gone for... What have I gone for? I've gone for Martinelli 10 points versus Wolves. Yes, I'm trying to double down. I'm assuming that I may sell him. We'll talk about this in a little bit. But given how I've been going over the last few weeks, whenever I've sold a player done really well, I've not bought a player of them really well, so I think it may well happen. Last week, just for the record, Sam predicted Archer and Solanke were to score. It didn't happen. And I predicted 4+ goals in Villa versus Spurs. Unfortunately, offside goals don't count, so it's still 2-0 to Sam. But yes, there we are. Right, on to the questions for this week. First question, not very many actually this week, but the first question is, FPL fail, and we kind of slightly touched on this earlier on. FPL non-Haalanders, when do you get him back? The Luton game in 16, he says, seems sensible, but considering the City blank in 18 and the fact the rest festive rotation is looming, is it more beneficial to wait and have the funds spread across your squad? So I suppose the Son sale is kind of, assuming you own Son, is kind of one way you potentially would do it, Adam. That kind of feels like one at the moment. You can kind of make that decision to make the move.
Yeah, I think that's the clear and obvious route. If you do own Son and don't own Haaland, I'd certainly be tempted to do that this week. I wouldn't look at Tottenham as a difficult fixture for City in their current state. But as to the question, how long do you hold out? I would almost be tempted to try and push through to the blank game week at this point. I mean, if you've been able to go through Bournemouth at home without him, I'm not sure I'd look at Luton away as any kind of worse prior to the game kicking off. Obviously, the Bournemouth game didn't really turn out how many of us Haaland owners had hoped, but yeah, I'd almost be tempted to kind of stick with this twisted experiment as long as I can and see it out through the blank at this point.
I don't know. I'd be the opposite. I think Sam and I have kept a consistent party line here about like appreciating, understanding, loving, applauding people who have done that and sold Haaland. Yeah, it made a lot of sense. Completely understand why you've done it. Your team looks great. But the thing is, the robot, in my view, is pretty inevitable. And I think we had the initial, I think we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago, the initial sort of outcome where Salah was matching. I think now you're in kind of a period where, all right, you've got Spurs at home next. I'm not going to bash on about the high line, but any home game for Haaland, especially against the team, Romero is not back in game week 14. So against the team who are playing a second choice defence, especially in the centre-back roles. Eric Dier, could he come in and make it? No, I'm not drunk. I think that's probably quite worrying. 15 Aston Villa away, how much are you buying into the hashtag highline narrative? And then you've got Luton away in 16, which is probably almost definitely when you want to get him back in. The peril, I think, comes in game week 16. That's the point where the effective ownership is going to get high. I think that if you can do it this week, if you do think that, you know what, buying into what Adam was saying earlier on, the kind of the negative story about Son, the personnel, the stats going down, ignore what you saw with your eyes if you watched the game. I think you can definitely build that sort of story for yourself. I think it might be the time to just kind of get that sorted this week, because I mean, I think he's probably a captain choice this week. He's certainly going to be in the frame for me. I think he actually is my boss captain at the moment. Comes that later. For me, I think it probably is time to do it now. Getting back. but I mean, if you are in, you know, is it sunk cost? Is it fantastic strategizing? I'm not entirely sure where you'd be if you were kind of taking the madcap experiment to have removed him. No, maybe done well, and it's very kind of circumstantial almost. I feel like kind of the story can be kind of spun either way of people who have gone against him over the last kind of few weeks. But I feel like kind of the time is becoming pretty nigh. If you can't get to do it this week, and you're kind of not going to buy into the Villa hashtag highline idea as well, I think the time would probably be to make sure that by 18. And that time's going to come by really quickly because FPL hits fast forward. Roll after this week for 60, is it 60, 15, 16? Yeah, 15 in the midweek. And then make sure you've got a way to get him in for 16 for that Luton game. I think the fears of rotation are probably also over-egged because he doesn't do very much on the pitch, frankly. Yeah. So he's not going to be that knackered, trust me.
And I think one thing, like you're saying, those around him are certainly set up to kind of exploit those high lines. And yeah, like you're saying, the threat of rotation with Haaland has always felt a little bit over-egged. I think people were reading too much into his Bundesliga injury record and trying to extrapolate that over to the Premier League I think by and large, if he's fit, he tends to play. So I wouldn't worry about it from that perspective at all. So I agree with you there.
Cool. All right. Next question. Chris, is it time to get rid of Cash? He's been a total disaster since I brought him in. Yes. Hear, Chris. He has not been particularly encouraging as an FPL asset. Some interesting behaviour in the last game, and I tweeted fairly early on in the first half, this guy's getting subbed at half time, and so he was. I think that's the second zero pointer in the last 3 weeks. I've got it was a clean sheet versus Luton. I think he got subbed off, didn't he, before they scored. He got the other card then as well. So I think it was 5 points. But since I brought him in, he's been awful. And he's a route actually this week, Adam, for me to double up on the Arsenal defence. I could sell him for Saliba, which is kind of something which I'm thinking about, especially because the next two games after the Bournemouth game, which is obviously appealing, I understand that. But after that, they've got Man City at home and Arsenal at home. Against that high line, the high line's going to mean they're going to concede 12 goals, Adam, per game. That could be an argument to get rid. And it doesn't seem to be quite working out for him. But I know the year before, you got that 21-pointer from Cash in double. Was it double game week, single game week? You must be more of a fan than most. And what's your view on dear old Matthias Kowalska? Would you be getting rid of him now, or would you be thinking, keep hold of him, he's still going to keep playing?
I think, like you're saying, I'd be looking to withdraw Cash ATM from my team. I think, in fact, I have done. There we go. That wasn't at all tenuous or strained. But yeah, no, I would be looking to get rid of him. I think there is a lot of talk about the fact that he's out of position. He's playing effectively as a right winger, which he is, and he is still getting very advanced, and he is still creating chances and putting in crosses and the like for Villa's attackers. But the returns from a defensive perspective are just a little bit too sporadic for me. And when you have the option of, even if you're not someone like yourself who would be moving to Saliba, you could move to Gabriel if you don't own him, or like we were talking about earlier, one of the other defensive options, you could drop down to Lascelles. And there are plenty of other options out there, I think, at the moment, which make me feel like Cash is certainly, he's expendable now.
Yeah, no, I'm probably the same. There's definitely kind of the cherry of the Bournemouth game.
Gosh, that was even worse than mine. How did you manage that?
Oh yeah, there's definitely that in front of you, but I think that there's definitely a good case to get rid of Cash, especially as Adam mentioned, if there's other options which kind of make it work for you. On the plus side for Cash, I think the kind of expected minutes are probably still pretty decent for him. There's definitely a few kind of questions about whether Emery goes with a Konsa or something as an inverted fullback. I'm not quite sure that's going to happen. And there's a Bournemouth up next, and there's a feasible idea that if you're in a better kind of squad, if you've got a deeper squad, you could then kind of take him, bench him, and then play other players during that sort of time frame. He's been very frustrating. I can understand what Chris says, that he's been a total disaster. And if he has a route to buying other players to strengthen your team, then potentially he's one that could go, and that's for sure. He's definitely on my mind as a player who's potentially on the chopping block for me this week. There's kind of the idea that there's kind of the question, especially with the 3 weeks in 1 week coming up, whether that's out of frustration because his ex-mins are still probably there or thereabouts. So it's one where, if you sell him, your eyes are wide open to the fact that he's still going to play those games, even though they're not the most kind of attractive games, that's for sure. You don't want to be kind of fielding him in those games. But He's still playing. He's still playing out of position, as Adam said, potentially. It could be one that you might just kind of try to roll with if you're in a better squad position, if that's your situation. For me, circumstantially, I think he might well go for an Arsenal defender, another Arsenal defender. But we'll see later. All right, next question. Dave Caesar at FPL says, for your team more broadly, what's the puntiest move you can suggest, which is still valid? Let's leave goalkeepers to one side, but defenders, midfielders, strikers, maybe that's kind of something that we can discuss. So I guess kind of the strikers, I don't know if Calvert-Lewin still, Calvert-Lewin, I'm not going to talk about him. Another Dominic, Dominic Solanke still counts as a punty sort of striker. But I wouldn't be too put off by the blank in Sheffield United. I still think that he's talismanic enough to be a decent pick over the next sort of, you know, long while. Frankly, I think he's one you kind of stick in and just kind of forget about. I think their fixtures are pretty good up until, I'm going to say, kind of end of December, start of January sort of time. So he could be one that you really look at. Nottingham Forest's Morgan Gibbs-White would be the midfielder that I point the finger at. I did mention him last week. It's not just a kind of a reactionary thing. I mentioned his kind of talismanic nature and mentioned the fixtures were very good. 12 points this week on penalties too. And that's something which is quite exciting. I think for a lot of people, Huang as well has scored a penalty for Wolves tonight. So he's on pens too. After the Arsenal game, two really good fixtures for Wolves, Burnley at home and Nottingham Forest at home in 15 and 16 before the fixtures do stiffen a little bit. So he could be one that you really look at. In defence, I don't know. I really don't know. I mentioned to Timothy Castagna as a joke last week, and he's definitely one that a few people have bought. Hello, Hindi Monkey. Because there's a 15 and 16, they've got a Nottingham Forest and West Ham, and a 17 and 18, they've got Burnley and Bournemouth. There's also kind of T-Ream dream. I'm not too sure about that, but it's between kind of Burnley and Wolves because there's two good fixtures in 15 and 16. But it's really kind of slim pickings in the defence, especially when you've got, okay, he's a little bit more expensive now, but you've still got Gabriel at 4.9, which you can probably get to, especially if you've sold Bowen from Bootmo. What about you, Adam? Forward, defender and midfielder.
Yeah, it's like you say with the defenders, it is really, really slim pickings. I'd almost be tempted to go for someone maybe like Mikalenko. I think he's very good at going forward. He does go forward, whether he's good or not kind of varies.
He wanders into the opposition half every now and again.
He tries his best, and what else can we ask for at the end of the day?
Yeah, he drops a 7.0 every game on Football Manager. That's more than enough for a new contract when his agent knocks.
Yeah, definitely. And the fixtures aren't great, but Forest away and Burnley away are certainly games where I'd probably be looking to play him if I did go that way. And yeah, it's like you say, the defensive options aren't great. There are potentially any one of the Fulham players that you want to pick up, but even then it's not massively enticing. I think the midfielder I would go for, and I wish I had an excuse to go for him, is Kluivert, not just because obviously the name is very nostalgic for a lot of people, but the price is surprisingly low. I think a lot of people wouldn't have expected him to be 4.6 million, but no. The fact that he's sort of playing off the striker now, or certainly playing more advanced, the upcoming fixtures I think are pretty good for quite a while. We talked about Solanke having a good run, and if they can form a partnership, for someone who's sub 5 million to be playing an attacking position with relatively good fixtures over the next few, and does of course cover game week 18. So you could look at it as, right, even if I don't want to play him in these fixtures, which I'm saying are relatively okay, he then can come in for me at game week 18 when someone like Haaland can't play or whoever it is.
Also Tavernier there as well. The James from Planet is always kind of saying, oh yeah, Tavernier, he's definitely on my radar at the football club. Got consciousness about Tavernier. But yeah, he's always one that I got a brace this week. And after kind of a quiet period, didn't he?
Yeah, he got a brace, but what has his dad ever done? That's so you're not looking at the narrative nostalgic factor there, Tom, which I think is very important.
Or his mate, Rangers.
The captain who takes penalties. Yeah. Are they actually related or not?
I don't know. I'll look that up while you talk.
Okay. And then the forwards, I'm loath to say João Pedro because I know so many people were kind of burnt from his benchings and penalty takings earlier in the season. And I know Flapjack will be very excited at anyone mentioning him in a positive light. I think he's got a strange love bordering on obsession for that man. But he'd be one potentially with Ferguson's fitness not exactly consistent, to say the least. He'd be one I would potentially be interested in.
Right.
Maybe Cunha as well, possibly.
Oh, draft hero. What a
exactly
hero.
If you're going down that low in the prices. And then, of course, there's not Neil Mope. What am I saying? Of course, there's not Neil Mope.
Yes.
But yeah, those budget strikers, which is really where I'd be looking for the kind of punts. It's not particularly replete with options. Otherwise, Isak, I don't know if he counts as a punt, but he's still relatively low owned. So I think he's more on the frisky side of things for a striker option.
There's Semenyo as well, if you really want to just get rid, you know, just get rid of all that money. Just be like, okay,
if you're free, get rid of all optimism or all hope.
If you're in a 3-5-2, get rid, got an assist against Sheffield United, got 65 minutes, bish, bash, bosh. Let's do it. Yeah, loads of good punts around there on teams where pre-game week one, we're all saying we're never going to bother about, we don't really care about, we're never going to be choosing anyone from them. God. Frauds we all are. And finally, Jordan says it's a difficult decision between Haaland and Salah captain for this week. What are your thoughts? Which is a lovely segue, thank you, Jordan, into this week's transfers and captains. This week, just a voiceover, Sam, he's got the captaincy on Haaland, so he is completely drawn in by that. Looking quite good this week, Sam. I think he's looking at Bowens and Bumo as well. But knowing Sam, he won't make any decisions until Friday evening. Let's move on to myself. So, like the casual I am, I decided to sell Bowen for Mbeumo last night because Bowen's looking like he's going to drop and Mbeumo's looking like he's going to rise. I don't really quite buy into the fixtures for West Ham, and I do buy into the fixtures for Brentford, as discussed, so I decided to make that move. And I've got a couple of decisions here, Adam, actually, because I could remove cash for Saliba, go double Arsenal defence and hope Ben White actually does step on the football field for longer than 1 minute. Or I could just right the ship and sell White for Gabriel and buy Martinelli for buy Saka for Martinelli. So, I mean, I'm very kind of hesitant to ask you for Arsenal advice because I know that you don't really like me asking you for that advice. But, I mean, would you just say that it's worth righting the ship if you are in my situation, or do you think it's kind of okay to, I guess kind of week to week, it kind of changes. But Ben White was an iron man for us. Like, he was always available up until when I bought him, which just seems like
up until you ruined him.
This is a disaster, isn't it? It's a disaster class of epic proportions, and Martinelli hasn't quite kind of cut the mustard. I don't know. Like, is it essential to be removing those two, or is it the case that, you know, give it a bit of time to, as Sam said to me, marinate, or is it the case to cut? Or should I kind of cut my losses there? I mean, what would your thoughts be?
I think it's looking at the Wolves at home fixture. It's difficult to say that you need to sort of fix it right away. I think certainly of the two, in a weird way, I'd almost be more tempted to hold on to Martinelli this week, just because the potential for an attacking return always seems more exciting. Certainly an attacking haul always seems more likely. I think with the White one, it might almost be worth just emotionally cutting your losses at this point. It's one where you write off, you might have made a mistake, just go to Saliba, sort it now, because White is only going to be making up ground for you from like an emotional perspective when you look at your time owning him, and sometimes that might not be the most logical thing to do, but I think that would be the move I'd attempt to make.
I feel like I'll be on the pod next Sunday and being like, I saw White and there he is getting an assist, getting a clean sheet. You know, I feel you. I do quite like the idea of double Arsenal defence, to be honest, for a little while. Like kind of, I suppose, trying to catch that kind of pre-Man City vibe before it kind of, before the wave crashes almost. So I think it may be one of those where people kind of start to think after a while, yeah, maybe White's not going to be the player who's going to be playing every week. But historically he was. Yes, he had an injury. You see what happens in the Champions League. But say he does kind of start to reassert himself. I know Tommy's done very well for us. But say he does start to reassert himself, and then I've got Saliba as the kind of the constant on the other side. I kind of wonder whether it might be worth kind of getting rid of cash, put myself in that position. And at least I can always kind of sell White if it doesn't work out. Yes, it does mean that I've got still Taylor and Kaboria as my backing vocalists, which is not fantastic, to be honest. More kind of castrati than tenors. It's one where I kind of think back to last week's pod. We were thinking about kind of what's the order of events, and for me, it was about kind of shoring up the bench because of how poor everything kind of was. Taylor's got Sheffield United at home and Wolves away, so I can hopefully kind of get away with that. But it's when it starts getting a bit more dodgy, or when I start getting kind of two free players who aren't in the squad or whatever during the kind of the risky business of the next few weeks, when Archer playing for Sheffield United, like who cares who they're playing against? They're rubbish. And then Kabore at Luton, yes, they're at home. Kenilworth Road, they're going to slap somebody there. I'm not sure they're going to slap Arsenal and Man City there. If they do, then I'll be very, very happy about that. But I don't think it's going to quite happen for this one. So yeah, I've got a lot to think about this week, that's for sure. And I don't know. I've got a couple of routes to kind of getting the Saliba thing in, and whether I kind of just get Saka in from Arsenal again, as you mentioned earlier on, that would be a hit. Is that worth it? I'm not sure. I mean, could Martinelli be rotated for Trossard, do you think, at any point?
It's a sensitive subject, as you know, of which I definitely have a completely flawless record of predicting when Arsenal midfielders will start. No comment. I refer to my attorney.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for that insightful answer. And for you... how are you looking this week? You've still got Bowen. So you've captained Salah. Sam and I are, I think, still on Haaland, to answer Jordan's point. I feel like the Man City at home versus an injured Spurs defence. I find it difficult to not back a Haaland for that game. But yeah, I mean, talk us through your team.
Yeah, so I think... in terms of moves, yeah, obviously I've still got Bowen in there at the moment. Even if Moyes is more optimistic on his return, I think I will probably sell him. And I think it will be for Mbeumo. I think that's the obvious and easy move to make. I don't think I'll do the double move that I mentioned earlier in terms of selling Alvarez and bringing in Isak, just because it would be a -4 for a player that I'm probably not going to play this week. I would choose to start both Palmer and Gordon ahead of him, I think. Or at least I don't mind starting either of them, so it's not like a problem I necessarily need to solve. Then in terms of defence, the only real decision there would be Gehi or Zouma, and I'm just backing the home team because I'm a filthy casual. And I don't care that I'm doubling up on one of the most irritating defences in the league in West Ham with Areola in goal, but we'll move on from that.
A big fan of feline assault as well, I see.
I really do need to refer to my attorney now. No, definitely not. Not a fan of any of his actions related to any animals at all. But
benching Alvarez as well.
That one is probably the decision that I would have to make, whether it would be between him or Palmer, I think, but Alvarez just hasn't looked as involved in recent City games. To be honest, even in the Chelsea game, he got an assist, which probably got him a stay of execution from mine, and many other people's teams. But yeah, he's just not looked as involved. And then obviously there was the rumours before the game of the weekend that he wasn't going to start and it was going to be Grealish. But then I think Grealish was had a dodgy tummy, too many vodka Red Bulls on a night out or something like that. So they couldn't play. So Alvarez, the dutiful in bed by eight type of guy that I'm sure he is, was there to step up. So now you're adding that kind of minutes concern over slightly subdued performances of late where, yeah. And he's the one I would be looking to sell in addition to Burn anyway. So yeah, I think I'll probably err on leaving him out, I think.
Cool. All right. Fair play. Well, I think that's a lot this week. Thanks so much for listening. We are Who Got the Assist. You can find me on X at WGTA_FPL. Sam at FPL Pricey on Instagram /Freds at WGTA.FPL. And Sam, FPL Pricey. If you enjoyed the pod, please do one that all of you are following. Follow us on socials, of course. Give us a five-star rating on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen to the pod. Or a like and subscribe on YouTube if you're watching there. I'm really sorry about the operation of the YouTube slideshow tonight. I blame Sam's absence completely. It's nothing to do with me. MBS. There we go. thanks so much for coming on, Adam. I know you were my fourth choice. Fifth choice. No, you're definitely my first choice. But yeah, it's been really good to, again, podding with you for your third time on the pod. I can't remember anymore.
For my last time on the podcast.
Yeah, no, not at all. Thanks so much for coming on.
No, it's been great. Thanks, as always, for having me on, Tom.
Cool. All right. Thank you very much. We hope you enjoyed the pod. We hope you think about those paradigm shifts going forward. We'll speak next Sunday as we hit fast forward. We'll probably kind of come back on the Thursday during the Spurs West Ham game. So it'll be some kind of reaction to what's going on. And after that, we'll be back on the Monday. Yes, thanks very much for listening. And we'll speak to you very, very soon.
Oh, it's a goal. Who got the assist? Who got the assist?
Sports Social Podcast Network.